Welcome to another episode of That Time I Got Reincarnated
in the same world
as an anime podcaster.
He did it for season two. I'm so excited.
We are officially in year two.
If you listen to this, if you haven't listened to any other episodes, that won't be special. But to me, Kermit the Grog, aka Andrew, that was very special.
Yeah, so episode 13. That's our official first episode of the second year. It's exciting stuff.
When I was reincarnated in the same year, it's an anime episode.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad we're doing this. I've been having a lot of fun, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, who are we having fun with? Who are we? New year, new start, new listeners.
Yeah.
And also old listeners, welcome back.
If you're actually new here, just to give you a little bit of an introduction, we are the Weeb Cabal. We have been watching anime and talking about anime and manga for many years now, and we decided we were going to do a podcast about it. I'm your host, Isekai Sensei Sama, aka Brad, and I'm joined in our Weeb Cabal by Kermit D. Grog, aka Andrew.
Hi ho, it's me.
And Bento Baggins, aka Ben.
Konbanwa, minasan.
So, yeah, today we don't really have any news items to talk about besides, you know, we're watching our standard shows we've talked about on the previous episodes, so you should go listen to those episodes and get our recommendations on that.
Yeah, we're in the middle of the season, so there's nothing too juicy hopping and popping right now besides the normal, like, hey, the episodes are good, or hey, they're not, but that's not our job. That's not that's not the kind of podcasters we are. There's somebody else already handling that just fine.
So, yeah, today we're just going to jump right into it, so here we go. Have you guys noticed this really weird thing where in certain manga or anime, they'll have the monster, it'll be a colt, they'll say, this is a kobold, right? And it's a wolf. But then other ones, they say, oh, they're kobolds, but they're lizards. Have you seen that?
I have seen that.
Where does that come from? Like, you'd think it's the same creature, like the same name. So why is it a different kind of monster?
I know the answer. Do you want the real answer?
Well,
that's why we staged this question to you, Ben.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the real answer is the same reason that orcs are so often pigs.
Yeah, I see that a lot.
You know, moblins from Zelda.
Yeah, and it's because that the D&D first edition manual had that. D&D later changed it so that kobolds were dragonkin and orcs are the big hulking tusked green monsters that they are today, and those either didn't make it over to Japan right away or they didn't catch on as big, and so the initial D&D 1.0 went in, established those ideas in the gaming and RPG community. And then the gaming and RPG community quickly became, especially in the 90s, the anime community. All of those guys were influenced by that.
So I guess to that extent, the wolf-type kobolds are technically accurate.
Yeah, I mean, as accurate as fantasy creatures are.
Well, right. It's strange that they would, like, change that, though. I mean, it's a fundamental physiological difference.
Well, it's also whatever you want it to be.
Like, well, yeah.
If you go back far enough, most of these things are just some kind of sprite or spirit, or they're not really differentiated except for storytelling or gaming purposes.
Yeah. The orc one is interesting to me. I didn't notice that one as readily, because if you think about orcs in the sense of like Tolkien or something, they're big, hulking, sort of humanoid creatures. Whereas the orcs in like manga, you get these pig-like creatures, but they aren't significantly different looking. Just the facial structure is generally different.
I'm going to show my nerdiness here.
Go for it.
And like, I just
literally
have to say,
that's the point of this podcast.
Yeah. Well, okay. But like, the orcs you're talking about from Tolkien are the Uruk-hai.
Oh.
And
I asked for this.
Yeah, the other orcs are synonymous with goblins, and they dwell in caves
Stick
and
with
such.
This people, I promise.
Yeah, no, we're going somewhere.
Excuse me, I was talking about the orcs that are related to goblins. They are humanoid.
They are humanoid. Yes, they're not pig-like.
And they're big.
They've never been
they're
pig-like.
They're much bigger than the goblins.
In the original Tolkien, orc and goblin is interchangeable.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Peter Jackson screwed us then.
Yeah, they had to change it a little bit. He called them goblins in The Hobbit, and he used the terms interchangeably in Fellowship of the Ring, and then he mostly just stuck to orc. But yeah, I know a lot about that. But it is interesting to see it all get translated through the lens of Japan, where I'm sure translations of Lord of the Rings are very popular in Japanese and in Japan, but the D&D stuff, they obviously didn't get the materials at the same rate we got it, but it
took root.
Yeah, it had such a heavy influence in their gaming industry that then went on to influence their anime, and the East and West kind of diverged at that point.
I had an interesting experience with it because really my first sort of, like, I've definitely heard the term kobold before, but I don't specifically remember ever seeing one and going, oh, kobold, that's the thing in my head now. And so I really got introduced to it in manga. And so I'm like, oh, kobolds, they're wolves. And then seeing it elsewhere and going, wait a minute, they're calling those little lizard things kobolds. What the heck are they talking about?
In World of Warcraft, they're rats.
Well, they're just rats?
That's just...
They're rat men.
Totally.
That's
wrong.
Even different than the other things.
I think the main thing with a kobold is supposed to be a tiny creature about 2 feet tall that lives in caves. It's not, it's semi-sentient. It's not quite as intelligent as an adult human. Maybe it's as intelligent as like a human child.
There is definitely a sort of a theme going with them where it's like kobolds. Sometimes you can like get along with them, even though they're technically monsters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're kind of supposed to be more semi-intelligent animals that they can speak, but they usually don't. They usually speak like children. Yeah. Or,
although I should say, there's one manga I read, an isekai, where a guy gets isekai'd to another world.
Why did you look at me when you said that?
Well, because I need to clarify.
Okay.
Not one of the four that isn't an isekai that I read. So he's isekai'd into another world as a werewolf.
Okay.
And so he becomes like the werewolf general, you know, and he's like part of the demon lord's army and all that stuff. But they, there's these other dog creatures that come along and they're like, they do like menial labor and stuff like that. And they call them kobolds, and they're like dog species, like dachshunds and German shepherds. And stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. They're really just like, you know, kobold. It's a shape of
it's
a
like
thing.
It's like a furry, I guess like dog thing. But the reason I wanted to talk about this was the bigger theme of today's episode is ways in which Japan kind of took things from the West and then how that mutated over time.
Mm-hmm.
And just the weirdness of, I like Ben's wording earlier, of like looking at this thing through this really particular cultural lens and what weird little things they gravitate towards.
Really big weird things. Well,
and also really big weird things.
And there's also...
Like kobolds.
Yeah, I mean, not to bury the lead. Like, there's also the kind of unwritten rules that somebody who didn't grow up in a European-based culture wouldn't understand of like... There's Europe as it was pre-Christian. There's Europe as it was under the Roman Empire. There's Europe as it was post-Christianity. And we don't usually tend to mix those things. Like in all of our fantasy stuff, we usually pick.
Yeah, there's a very clear delineation between like ancient versus medieval.
Yeah, we don't tend to mix our druids and our crosses.
Yeah.
But in Japan, they didn't quite get the memo. They're just like, this is all old European stuff, right?
It's all the iconography. So that's
a good point. There's like, they use crosses all over the place. There's always this idea of like, the priesthood and stuff like that.
Yeah, but and it's yet, always like, what's it for?
Well,
like,
right, because it's never like, oh, our singular god. It's like, no, we have this god, she's named this thing, and there's yeah, other
or
gods.
Or a goddess, or it's a pantheon.
But they still use crosses and stuff.
And yeah, you know, and they don't reference a
crucifixion. What is the cross for?
Or all of, like, having bishops and cardinals yeah. and, like, a pope and stuff. So... Now that we've moved towards more, and I've taken the mic a little bit, like one of the main reasons, besides us generally wanting to talk about this kobold thing, because I find it fascinating that they got volume one of D&D and then just didn't, and then it just sort of mutated on its own, was I was reading talked about earlier in an early episode, Faraway Paladin, and just got to a point where it's just like, oh, we're dealing with the church, and it's got all the trappings of the church. Here's like the corrupt bishop, and here's the cardinal, and everybody's wearing the big hats and the frocks. Mm-hmm. But they have like a pantheon of gods yeah. and they're named like really like a grade schooler named all of the like Greek gods something.
Oh, well, and that's another one. I mean, simply like the language itself is something like the idea that English is exotic to a Japanese ear.
Yeah, which I mean, Japanese is exotic to us.
Right, right. And so we notice then some of the nerdiness that we probably do to them. Like you have Ariana Grande getting Shichirin tattooed on her hand, thinking it means seven rings when Shichirin means small barbecue.
Oh, that's great. That's my favorite. I always remember iShield 21, that some foreigners come over to Japan and they get tattoos yep. of Japanese language. They think they means really strong, and it just meant like big shit and his little brother little shit. And just that has always just been like, never get a tattoo of another language that you don't know or speak, because that yep. just will automatically happen. You'll become tiny barbecue.
Yeah. And so you wind up with things like in Faraway Paladin, Grace Feel, which I think is not at all what they meant to say.
It's better than, because I was going to say like, well, the god Whirl and the god Bolt, and it's like, okay, are we naming freaking American gladiators? Like, that, what's going on?
That makes me
and
wonder.
Laser.
I obviously don't read any of these in the original Japanese. Do you think the kanji for like the name of the position that they use actually says like bishop? Like Bishipu or whatever.
I would have to look. In my experience, when it is borrowing an English word, they do it in katakana. So Gracefield is like Gure Sufiru.
Mm.
But it's not just that they're using the words. It's like the visual like and storytelling trappings, but having none of the understanding. Like reading right. Faraway Paladin, it's like every isekai thing that I've seen, either directly or like through the little looking glass into Brad's brain, like... You see it everywhere, and I don't know why. With I think it was just because it was like it was so Christian Catholic trappings, and it's like, here's your Greek pantheon. Like, I was raised Catholic. I'm not really religious anymore, and I just started getting like pissed off. I was just like, you guys are using this like this kind of important cultural thing to a lot of people, and like that is in my background as just like set dressing that you don't understand.
Well, and as much
and
as
then
I
Ben,
like...
I think it was Ben, but it might have been you, Brad, coined the old meme of like, my culture is not your costume. And I like felt that, and I'm like, I get it now. Well, yeah. Not that I didn't get it before, but like I felt it in a way that it's just like you just cut that out. Like make your own thing.
Like,
if
hey,
you're gonna, if you're
is
gonna
this
stray...
what cultural appropriation feels like?
Exactly. It's I'm like, not if you're the gonna dominant stray culture. So far from it, like don't it, I don't know. It felt like it, like, it felt insulting, even though I am not in the party to be insulted for that anymore. But it was just very like, I don't know why that one put me over the line, where it's just like, if you're just going to not make it Christianity, just don't make everything look exactly like Christianity. Like, they just don't get it. It is literally a costume to them. And I find that so strange.
The Faraway Paladin one, I think, is so much more egregious. I love Faraway Paladin, but that whole part of that makes the least amount of sense because of how many different gods there are. And the fact that, like, a god's power is related to how many worshipers they have.
Yeah.
So you're saying,
but
oh,
they're
here's
all in
this...
one house. They're in one big Christian-looking cathedral.
Right. You're saying, like, oh, here's this monolithic, like, church, and we have bishops, and but, you know, this person worships only this person, and this person...
But
like...
they're all somehow, like, but it's not... Because it's like, you could go, oh, it's like the freaking... It's like, oh, the different, like, saints and whatnot. But it's like, they don't understand
that. That's actually
that.
Probably... But much more at
that. We could do that, but you would have to know, and they clearly don't, because it's just kind of like using it as set dressing, and it's everywhere.
It's a weird feeling for an American.
Yes.
To not be, to have another culture that is dominant, you know, within their own sphere. The people that this was made for are not going to know what these symbols mean to you. Like, you're not going to look at it, like, they don't associate crosses with crucifixions, with crucifixes.
And that's the weirdest one.
Yeah. And they just associate it with holy.
Right.
And
this is a man that's dead on that thing. And like, again, whether you believe it or not, like, it's just that complete disconnect of like, this is kind of a really important symbol. And y'all are just like tossing it around like spice on something with your shitty little fantasy stories.
I think more so just the fact that like the cross means something specific. I mean, I think it's weird that Christianity uses the cross, but whatever. But like, there's a very specific reason that that symbol exists. And they just like gloss over that completely. And they're just like, well, priests wear crosses. That's the thing.
That's what I find so fascinating about it. It's as if they saw it. It's like, oh, I saw this movie, but I only saw some of it and I didn't get to hear it. So I only got the visuals. And this was the understanding I took away from it. And then that germinated for decades and decades and decades. And it's a weird little pressure cooker. And out pops our current situation.
Well, although, you know what? This is an interesting point, though, because I am aware that Japanese people are aware of Christianity.
Yes, but it's different.
It's a small minority, but they have Christians in Japan. There are Japanese Christians.
But they don't typically, unless it's in a place that used to be a foreign settlement, they don't have big churches.
Right.
Most Japanese Christians meet in like what we would call like a Knights of Columbus Hall or something like that. Yeah. Just some rental space.
But still, they should be somewhat aware of what the cross is and what it means.
I don't know that Japanese Christians go out of their way to tell everybody that they're Japanese Christians.
True.
I do think you get looked at pretty
Which is weird because Jesus and his brother lived in Japan for a time.
I have heard that.
Is it his brother in that one?
I don't think they say at the same.
It's Buddha, right? We're talking about an anime where isn't it?
No,
anime?
No, no. Like, no, literally, they believe.
Yeah.
There are
sects
of Christianity.
I thought you were talking about that anime that it's no. Jesus and the Buddha,
but
like,
that one
futzing
is
around
hilarious.
Having good times.
I can recommend
that. I thought that's what you were referring to.
No, there's literally, there's sects of Christianity in Japan. One of them believes that Jesus, after he was resurrected, came and visited Japan. And then there's another sect that believes that their sect of Christianity started when Jesus's brother came and lived in Japan.
Well, and
Craig, his brother Craig?
I think James.
No,
but, I mean, really, Craig Christ.
Christ, it's a song. Yeah.
But I think some of the stigma around Christianity in Japan is like the Shoko Asahara cult. I think they all use Christianity as sort of like a baseline.
Yeah.
And so it attracts this kind of weird mysticism grifter type.
That is, as cult-like as Christianity can be in America, it's very much more cult-like in Japan.
Yeah.
Which is strange.
But I do understand how they get to this point of not really getting the boundaries, because there's no written rule that tells us, okay, in D&D it's a fantasy world and you're going to have clerics and you're going to have priests, but you're not going to have like priests of the one true God, because this is a fantasy game. Right. And that would offend people.
I mean, unless that's what your character is. I do remember long ago listening to people playing D&D 4th edition, and that there was the Jewish dwarf Banana Ramowitz who attempted to convert people.
Jewish?
He was Jewish.
There's Jewish people in D&D.
I mean, in this campaign there was. There was a dwarf named Banana Ramowitz that was.
But I get, you know.
Good name.
If you're...
Well, so that's why I wanted to say it, because it's great.
If you're Japanese and you played D&D and you played a cleric, and then you want to write something that's somewhat inspired by that, and you start Googling cleric. What is a cleric?
Well, also, you don't have Google because it's the 80s.
Well, yeah. So you go to the library and you start looking this stuff up, and you're going to find this symbology, and you're going to think, oh, these Gothic cathedrals look so cool with the stained glass, with the spires and everything. They look intimidating and arcane. And you're just going to read into that, the combination of stuff you've been told about it, not understanding, because we don't usually write that. You don't have to write that in the D&D rulebook that, like, this is a priest, but not like a Christian priest.
But he looks like one, and he's got a lot of the trappings of them.
We know where to stop, though.
And because, like, we know, like, we even if you are not religious or were not raised religious, you have come against, living in America, you have come against a cross of Christianity at some point in some form,
yes,
in a meaningful way. You have been to a church, you've known somebody who is religious, you've seen the iconography, you know the Pope exists, and but, just, I can't fathom not having that, and I think that's why this both frustrates me and fascinates me, where it's like, this thing that is just instant knowledge to my brain is like the weird mysticism that I get with learning about, like, Japanese Shinto religion and samurai and, like, yokai and all this stuff, because it's the whole, like, foreign is this, like, cool, exciting thing. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've done that to a huge extent with the East. I mean, Orientalism is a big problem.
Literally the fact that I'm describing East and West on a pretty consistent basis.
So we're talking about D&D in the 80s kicking off a lot of this stuff. But we know for a fact that, like, at the end of World War II, a lot of American culture started flowing into
Japan. That's why Japan likes baseball. There's literally, like, I read a book about it. I think it was actually about Japanese crime. but it was just, like, all the American GIs being there. It's like one of the first Japanese pizza places was a crime hangout.
Yeah.
Because it was like, it could make money and it made you super popular because I'm Japanese. What's a pizza? And it's like, let me tell you, it's one of the best foods literally ever invented. It's the perfect food.
I'm thinking, do you know of, like, an earlier example, like pre-World War II, Disney, where that might have happened?
Yeah, Disney.
It's Disney.
Disney was getting big in Japan.
Disney begats anime, begats current Disney animation.
There was
in some ways.
A story, I forget which animator it was. It was one of the guys who went on to be big in the Japanese animation scene.
It's the Astro Boy guy, isn't it?
No, I don't think it was Tezuka.
I swear it's Tezuka.
Well, okay. Tezuka was big influenced by Disney. But for the specific story I'm saying, there was somebody who captured his unit in World War II, captured an American sub.
Oh, I don't know this one. I'm excited and for the story.
In the American sub was a copy of Fantasia. And this guy apparently, like, burned out the tape watching it so many times and, like, cried at. Yeah.
No, this doesn't make sense.
I don't know. When did Fantasia come out?
You just said the tape.
Or not? Maybe not the tape. I don't know what they had a copy of it on.
Why would American GIs have a film reel of Fantasia in the 40s?
Hey, Siri. When did Fantasia come out?
Fantasia is out at this point. They finish it before the war kicks off.
Here's what I found.
No, that's not right.
But just, I don't know. I'm sorry.
No, 1940, 1936.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying they couldn't have it, but the idea of, like, this thing that people didn't like at the time being in an American GI sub when they're in the oceans of the Pacific seems outlandish to me. Also, you said that it burned out the tape.
Well, yeah.
It's not a tape. It'd have to be a film reel.
But he watched it apparently a lot and was heavily influenced by it.
I could believe that.
And
that part.
There were a lot of stories, like, obviously Tezuka for Astro Boy decided.
Yeah, watching Snow White. I think that's the story I know.
He decided to replicate Disney, and they were trying to replicate with the early anime a lot of Popeye. Popeye became a huge thing.
Yeah, he's big. He was supposed to be the first big, like, Nintendo thing, and then they lost the... I don't remember if they lose the license or something happens, and that's why we get Mario, because it's supposed to be Popeye.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the first Japanese exports after World War II was a Jeep, a toy Jeep, made by a guy named Kosuge, I think. It became, like, really famous among collectors and stuff.
Hmm.
But it was one of the few things that they could make. That was a big factor. Like, after the occupation, a lot of stuff, materials were just scarce. Mm-hmm. All the industry had been bombed out. And so they made it out of junk, like stuff the Americans were throwing away. They got permission to raid the junk piles and, like, steal tin and stuff to make these things. But then, yeah, you got Tezuka copying Disney and animation itself being a loan word. Anime is short for animation.
It's called Japanimation.
If you read the kana in any anime, they all have like opening animation. It's literally the kana for opening animation.
But it's that whole language is words gain meaning beyond their literal meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't call, like, anime is animation, but we wouldn't call it that. Its main designator is anime, which means it's from Japan, even when that's not technically true. Also funny, though, is that most American animation, even if it was American directed, isn't made in America. It's made in Korea.
Yeah.
Or sometimes also even literally Japan, which was like, is that anime? Oh, no. Because if you start doing it too literally, the whole system kind of breaks down. Oh, and it's like, what are we doing?
When I wonder if they're going to start using AI for that instead.
What?
For in-between frames.
Almost assuredly.
Because that's what they do.
I don't
want
to think about any of this AI stuff
they have
when it comes to artistic invention and adventures.
Like the Western studio does like the keyframes, and then they ship that over to
Korea
and they make all of the in-between frames.
Well, I don't know how true that still is now.
Yeah, that's a good
There's
point.
Still a lot of Korean names in the credits of...
Oh, I'm sure.
Even anime now.
My knowledge base isn't as up-to-date as my old stuff where it's like learning. It's like, oh, The Simpsons and a bunch of like early Cartoon Network stuff was mostly done.
Yeah.
All the in-betweens are done or main animation was done overseas.
But that AI image generation stuff is getting crazy.
Yeah.
The way you can like take a photo and say, replace something right here and it'll fill it in. Or you can take a picture of somebody and say, I want this picture to be in Pixar style or whatever. And it'll just make that.
It's scary. Let's not talk about that.
I thought of another Western influence on anime.
Ah.
Big muscle dudes.
Mm.
Right around the time Schwarzenegger and Stallone start getting...
Schwarzenegger, Stallone. I was going to talk about Mad Max, inspiring. Yep.
Fist of the North Star
and JoJo to an extent.
Yep. But, why am I blanking on the name of the person who writes JoJo?
Oh, shoot. Now I am too.
Araki.
Thank
Jeez.
You. Yeah.
I know.
What am I doing?
I was going to make a joke earlier that we moved on too quickly, but now that we're talking about JoJo, I want to do when we were talking about Jesus traveling and his brother traveling to Japan.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, well, if you listen to JoJo in part 7, Jesus' body is around America.
Right.
Which is very Mormon, I think.
Well,
right.
So there's, was it the Mormons?
I guarantee
who believe
no one in Japan knows about Mormons.
That after Jesus was resurrected, he went to America, and like some Native American tribe is like the 12th tribe of Israel
tribe of Israel. Yeah.
I'm sure. I don't know.
It's all weird.
Question if it's ethical to eat Mormons.
Yeah. But obviously, American film influenced a lot of the action manga that was coming out
and early like video game stuff. Like maybe it was just I didn't get it as a kid because I didn't necessarily know the American stuff, but like over time learning how much is inspired by Western stuff that you wouldn't notice. Like there are giant sheets of images of characters from One Piece that are specifically Oda has talked about. The author of One Piece has said, yeah, they were based on this actor or this person. And then you like compare them.
Well,
in like ways that you're not expecting, but it's like the JoJo thing. It's like he got pretty modern with a lot of those albums, but it's just been so long that it just is.
Yeah, and I think
they feel old, but they're not. They weren't at the time.
As opposed to like the Kobold stuff and the Christianity stuff, which sort of like evolved over time and just sort of became like really prevalent without the initial anchor point. Those examples are more like, this is a direct reference. The author is going, I like this Western media thing, and I'm going to take that specifically and use it.
Yeah, but it's like, it's somehow you're not expecting to see it, and it's just, it's, I don't want to just say transmuted, I guess, enough through that lens that you don't, because it's like, you're like, well, I'm reading Dragon Ball. Why does... What's the Dragon Ball's artist name? I've lost it for a second.
Toriyama.
Yeah, I can't remember anything right now.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, I don't think about this man in this culture that I don't know because I'm freaking a teenager knows about, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger and has seen The Terminator. Yeah. But it's like, of course he has.
Well, but he's either watching it subtitled or dubbed.
Yeah, but he's still, like, taking it in. But, like, when you see certain characters in Dragon Ball, you put the lines together and you're just like, oh, you know, freaking facepalm. Of course, they were cribbing notes from things in the same way that we were cribbing notes from their stuff.
How do you do an Austrian accent in Japanese?
I doubt they would even attempt. They would probably just make him sound like he was from some version of Japan.
Some so speaking Japanese. Japan.
But I think the Western inspired like fantasy adventure is the interesting one because that has developed into its own set of tropes. Like
you
and now, because this whole thing is like a conversation between East and West that was playing out like over decades by the time things got translated back and forth. Now with isekai, I see in books, like all these independent novels that are coming out, I see a bunch of kids trying to write web novels in America, light novels in America. Isekai and all that Western fantasy from Japan has influenced people writing in the West now. They have started taking things that they like from it.
It's the conversation.
They like the... Well, and you also notice in all of those Western things, with a few exceptions, like Record of Lodoss War literally tried to be Lord of the Rings. But for the most part, it all incorporates a lot of gaming. It's a version of the West. I mean, obviously, Lord of the Rings is a version of the West that never existed, but like...
Dragon Quest. We haven't said it yet, but it's been on the tip of my tongue this entire time. It's like that is the fantasy video game pillar.
Well, so did that.
That shakes calendars for the government.
That
shapes other games that have nothing to do with it. Like, it's everywhere.
That makes me wonder though, because like the general video game elements that you see in an isekai are very heavily influenced from RPGs
and MMOs.
You have like these progression systems. You have like the skill points you're spending.
That's Dragon Quest,
but like,
which was influenced by those people who were into that D&D first edition.
That was like learning that this thing that I thought was very like, and that I guess that can come back to that whole like things seem exotic. Like, I find Dragon Quest to be the most like rote nothing. Like, I don't get why it's a staple, but because the pieces of it came from a foreign place, even if they don't know it, to the Japanese, it was novel. And to hear where we're just like, oh yeah, it's D&D. Who gives a shit?
Well, and that's the thing. So are those video game elements directly coming from that that D&D base, or is there some Western predecessor of, you know, the JRPG, just a regular RPG that is like influencing that?
Because
obviously, as a tabletop RPG, D&D influences that as far as like your stats and your progression and everything, but like, did that start? Were JRPGs first?
No.
So I would say, first off, this is a criminally understudied thing. I get frustrated with this. This is part of the reason I've been pushing so hard to increase my Japanese reading proficiency, because I have seen a lot of books I want to read about these kinds of like super niche histories, and they're only in Japanese. There is no market for them. I'm the only person who wants to read them in English. And but there was one Kermit lent me, the Legends of Localization for Zelda. I was just thinking about that.
Hey,
the magic book in Zelda.
It's Bible.
Was a Bible.
It's a Bible.
Yeah.
And they had to take the cross off of it. Yeah. And there was a lot of stuff like that they had to get rid of because it was too occult, too weird for kids. And we were in the midst of a satanic panic when all that was happening, the whole big rebound against Dungeons and Dragons, which they never had. So they could just keep going. And so I do think RPGs started off way bigger in America, but you see this with manga too. There was a rebound, a moralist rebound that didn't happen in Japan. Mm-hmm. So Osamu Tezuka rips off Disney. I shouldn't say rips off. He's inspired by Disney.
Heavily inspired.
And then he makes what he calls manga. Whimsical pictures.
Whimsical pictures.
And then there's another movement that spawns from that. Manga becomes huge. They can't fill the magazines fast enough. Everybody's drawing manga. Also because it's like one of the only entertainments people can afford in post-war Japan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then all these people who are getting into like student protests and like maybe it's time for America to get the fuck out of our country.
How did that go?
They were quashed by the military.
Yeah. But, hey, buds, we still got Korea and Vietnam to go through, and you guys are right nearby, and we're going to stay here.
Yeah. But they start drawing Gekiga, which are dramatic pictures, which is kind of like the manga that I love, the big, violent, hyper-dramatic.
You're berserk.
Yeah, all that stuff. But at, like, that same thing wanted to happen in America. We had the same student movements. We had the same rebel artists. But we had the Comics Code Authority that just shut that down. Our publishing houses were going out of business right and left while Japan was booming. And then I think the same thing started happening around gaming, where we kick it off. We've got D&D. We're starting to build all these complicated RPGs. And then we get a satanic panic backlash against it. And it kind of keeps it from being mainstream, keeps it underground. But Japan's allowed to thrive. They're allowed to make Zelda inspired by all of that. They're allowed to make Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest. And they can just keep going. And a lot of that stuff doesn't get brought over right away because of that satanic panic backlash. Like, that's why they had to change Zelda from having a Bible. And yeah, I think that's part of where the divides get worse. Like, it's like two groups of the same species being separated by a river. And then one of them just evolves into have a different color or something.
Yeah. An ocean.
Yeah, or an ocean. Or an ocean. And so, yeah.
A lack of internet and or phone conversation.
But now that it's coming back, I think I have started to see a lot of people. Like, let's take a look at World of Warcraft or something like that. World of Warcraft has paladins, priests, and the Holy Light. But they are terrified to say that the Holy Light is anything resembling any kind of like Christian Holy Spirit.
There's no capital G's around here.
Yeah. And so they're like kind of stuck though, because obviously they were picturing these big crusader Knight Templar dudes. Yeah. And they can't say where the is the holy light.
They cribbed the notes, but they know well enough what they can and can't do with said notes and iconography.
Right. Whereas Japan has
no qualms about that because they don't either know or give a shit. Yeah.
The number of people in their population who are going to be offended by it is functionally zero.
Also, just the whole, you know,
I didn't even think about that. That obviously makes a ton of sense. You have this population that looks at a cross and goes, "Oh, there's a lowercase T. I know that English letter." As opposed to a population who looks at that and goes, "Why is this thing wearing a cross, but they're talking about some like weird?"
Here's a weird one. Ignore. The kanji for dirt is a cross on top of a line.
Ooh.
And I'm always able to remember it because to me it looks like a grave.
Yeah.
But they would just see dirt.
That's
wow.
I'm 14 and this is deep.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but it is like, it is one of those things where it's like, if you see a cross, like that's just not a sacred symbol to you. I can't help but see it. Yeah.
It is physically impossible
and
for me.
I have the same thing with the Star of David and the moon and the star for Islam. Yep. Like if I saw those symbols anywhere, if I saw them like printed on a t-shirt next to some guy shooting a magic beam, I'd be like, whoa.
If I saw a freaking Star of David on that, my hands would instantly go up and go, whoa, Japan, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I know how you guys feel about the Nazis. It really makes me uncomfortable. I don't trust you.
I will say, though, the Star of David and the moon stuff, that actually makes more sense as a religious symbol to me, as opposed to the thing our Messiah was killed on.
Well, again, they don't know. They have no frame of reference. Like, why is in The Legend of Zelda?
I'm
like,
saying
it's
from the
magical
West.
Book. I'm putting in air quotes.
You're saying it doesn't make sense for Christians to
use it.
I get why they use it. It's the most important part of the story that ties them all together. Yeah. But it's just
interesting. This is not the podcast to talk about the nitty gritty of that.
Right. But yeah, it's just interesting. Like your knee jerk reaction, what you were raised. Like in Japan, you're not going to hear about Christianity probably until you're like maybe 10 at the earliest. Like that's an obscure world cultures thing. Like I hear they heard about that the same time I realized India had a caste system, and it's just not baked into my internal prejudices at all. I don't
like Japan. Does Japan really have like a modern religion? Like, do they go to something that is describable as a church?
They
like,
have traditions. They don't have any religion the way we do.
Okay, that was what I wanted to confirm.
Yeah, because there's like the like everybody. I say everybody, but like it's definitely not everybody. Like you go and visit the shrine at the New Year because that's something. The thing that you do. It's
you go
like,
to a Shinto shrine at the New Year.
It's like, do you believe in Shintoism?
You have a Buddhist funeral. I might get married in a Christian church.
I was thinking of like Persona 5 because it was something I played where they do have that you go to the Shinto shrine, but also like there's a whole little subplot that has you going to a church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, was that a Christian church? Like, I don't like, I was trying to think and remember on it, but it just seems like it seemed odd.
In all honesty, I sort of like that cultural idea of like, hey, we think these things are neat. We're just going to do those things.
Yeah.
I think it's just, I don't think there's anything wrong with, hey, this looks cool because we do it. And I can't, you know, I'm a big proponent of don't throw stones when you live in glass houses.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when's the
last? But I think it's just the particular things what you decided to borrow in this case is kind of like a little like, you know, pull up my collar. It's like, did you have to pick these?
Well,
they're
I mean,
kind of important to people. And it just is like,
Yule was very important to the Norse when the Roman Catholic Church decided they were going to celebrate Jesus's birthday on it. And Samhain was very important to the Druids. And
I know. We're getting into danger territory.
That was directly on purpose. They did that for a reason.
Yeah, I know. But that's what, like,
it's the lack of understanding and purposefulness that it just, it's like a very childlike, these look, you look cool, get in kind of way that I think is what makes me, I'm like, and I think some of this is also my bias of, I don't like those fantasy settings and I'm getting really tired of them.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it was just that one, the, you know, when I was reading Faraway Paladin, it finally like actively got to the moment of like, needlessly pissing me off where it's like, it's not going to change. But it was just like the, you know, I come back to that phrase. It's like, my culture is not your costume. Like at least have like, just have a little understanding of it that if you're going to use it, like try like, freaking tricks dedicated to witches. Churches in there. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Implemented correctly. Everybody's rocking and rolling like there should
well,
be.
Well, and
like
that was actually, they, in that series, they were very clear. Like, this is Christianity.
This is
medieval Christianity.
Yeah. And like they got that, they got what they needed to write on that one, and I was in for it.
Bring back tricks dedicated to witches.
Yeah, forgot about that until right now, and I'm sad about it again.
I don't know that a Japanese student would have any reason to think that the Greek gods should have any more meaning than Jesus Christ,
or that they should have not even the meaning, that they should have the same iconography.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
which just seems like, guys, come on.
Well, and
but
it was
also like I can't expect them to change. They have no reason. I'm gonna keep freaking doing dumb stuff with samurai and a bunch of other stuff I've stolen from Japan or borrowed or whatever what verb we want to use. Like, I feel like this is what a lot of these episodes come down to, is I'm frustrated about this, but I shouldn't be.
Which is why
I have a podcast about it.
Do you guys know that game Smite? I think it's a MOBA.
Yes.
And it's all about old gods, like they're the characters. And they put in like Shiva.
Yeah.
And then realized that, there's about 2 billion people that don't think Shiva's just a video game character.
Well, that happens quite a lot. You see the like the Greek gods, the Roman gods, the Norse gods, the
Egyptian gods.
What is the religion called?
Hindu?
Shiva. Is it Hindu?
Yeah, Hinduism.
The Hindu gods. And they just mix all those up. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, yeah, all these gods. But then don't you dare put Jesus in there.
Well,
don't you dare put another.
But
I'm going to shut up before I say something that should be cut.
But Smite got in big trouble with India because they want 2 billion potential customers.
Yeah.
But they just weren't very sensitive to that culture because, again, you're raised with you don't care about Shiva.
Yeah.
That's just,
well, I
it's
should
just
say
a cool looking thing.
It's just an aesthetic to you.
Well, there you go. I guess, yeah.
As a former Lutheran, I want to see Jesus in more fighting games.
He's in fighting games. Have you not seen any? I don't remember what it's called, but there's one where he's fighting and literally his gauntlet's made of the cross and he can fight Santa.
I think there's lots of gods in that one.
There is. That's the bit.
Right. I want to see him in more games like Smite.
I want to see Jesus flipping tables. I want to see Jesus chasing people out of there.
Is Jesus under copyright? Yeah. Isn't there a Jesus game or a Bible game coming out that everybody on the internet was talking about?
Is there?
I think so.
The Bible MMO.
Let me tell you about a game called the U Testament. Oh, boy. No, but I guess I thought I had a means of tying this together.
For me,
don't.
For me, and I think for you, I roll my eyes when I see that aesthetic for a couple of reasons. And one is because it's kind of lazy.
Yes.
I don't mind that they borrowed the ideas and did their own thing with it. I don't mind that they have an incomplete understanding of, you know, my culture or you know, not even my culture. They just have an incomplete understanding of Christianity. But it's because they're all Dragon Quest clones.
Yeah. it's not the fact that there is one of them. It's the fact that there are hundreds of them.
Well,
and it won't stop. It will never stop.
Yeah, I guess, you
and
know.
And I think that's why, you know, one drop of rain is nothing. But when you're getting bombarded and it also, like you said, Ben, it's like lazy because it's just like, oh, we're doing like the Greek gods, but just everything looks like the Christianity thing because that's what it's always looked like and done.
To give Japan one, I would say I'd equate it to the explosion of ninja movies in the 80s and 90s.
Admittedly, ninjas aren't a religious thing, but yeah. That's why I said samurai.
It's like, it just gets samey and lazy. It's an aesthetic people like, and they roll with it.
Does that tie back to what I've said about isekais in general, which is like it gives you the starting point. So you don't have to explain all this stuff. People already know about it. We can get right into the story.
Yeah.
Considering the number that are produced, it's a red flag to me.
Oh, sure.
It's not a final verdict.
There
are those, like, I liked
90% of isekai are terrible.
So. I liked Faraway Paladin. I didn't mind that there was a Christian nun who worshipped the life goddess in there and made bread.
Hey, that was magic bread.
I know.
She was a vampire.
Yeah. Mummy. Are you my mummy?
Mummy is a whole different kind of Orientalism that we could talk about.
I want to pull this segment to a
but I think,
close.
Yeah,
but
I think
that's the thing we've had with isekai. It's just, there's a lot of things where just, we're giving you this. This is shorthand for the world. These are the parts. These are the ingredients for my isekai cookies that I didn't want to get myself. Here is just the flour.
Right.
This is the flour. Mm. This is the...
But then
this
you
is
have
the
to...
holy water. This is the wine, the blood of Christ that I put in my cookies because that is how we've always made cookies, and I have no reason to take it out of my cookies. So that's what they are.
And I think it's fine to do that, to give that sort of jumping off point. But then the story that comes after it has to be good.
It's the sheer number of them.
I think
I can't stop. I have to. I feel like this is the lesson I learn every podcast. I can be frustrated with this. There's legitimacy in it, but I can't stop the river because I'm over here and there's a billion people who think otherwise.
I mean, we've brought it up over and over again just tonight, the Faraway Paladin thing, where it's like, this is a good series, but they do this where they give you these things to sort of give you a shorthand to get you into it. But the story beyond that is good.
I think that's why Faraway Paladin pissed me off the most, is that it has shown itself to have the chops to have made its own thing, and when it just doesn't so heavily and blatantly, where it's like, I know you're a better chef than that, yet you used the same ingredients that everybody else used, even though you were so delicate with so many other things in what you were doing. And I think that's, we go to Ben's things. I think it's laziness in a series that proved that it wasn't lazy.
I don't think.
And that's where the frustration stems from.
Yeah, I think probably my final thought on this is, I think cultural inspiration is always going to be like a conversation. People are always going to get it wrong. I think they should be free to experiment with that a little. Mm. I don't mind that they use religious imagery. I know there are people that do. I don't care. But you could never go wrong looking into something a little more. If you're really going to explore fantasy and stuff.
What did those Germans do during the war? Maybe we should look into that before we start using their iconography and things and thinking they're real cool. Wouldn't that be a thought?
Maybe we should look what everybody was doing in the war.
Right,
before we decide.
Maybe we, speaking as Japan, should look into what we did during the war. Oh, no, we can't do that. Let's not think or talk about that.
But we probably shouldn't.
Why is China getting mad again?
We probably shouldn't go too far into that just to make sure that this podcast isn't illegal in Germany.
I think Germans are cool. I don't think Germany has an issue with it. We really need to end this segment, so this could totally get cut. Yeah. But like, my beef is that Japan super doesn't pay attention to what it did in the war, and Nazis show up as like not just the lowest of the lowest dirt in too many anime for me to believe otherwise.
Yeah.
Well, see JoJo, see Helsing, see other things that I can't think of.
Hey, these Nazis are pretty cool. No. No.
Maybe take a moment. Again, also, maybe learn what you guys did during the war. I'm not going to say us as Americans were squeaky clean during the war, but also, like, we learn about that. I learned about the Japanese internment camps when I was in school. I learned about that stuff.
I learned about Japanese internment camps from George Takei.
Well, I was going to say, and that's the thing is, we do have
I heard before.
We have a much more diverse population, and so we
have an understanding of these.
We have an increased sensitivity, or we should.
There are people nearby to yell about it when there is Muslim chanting in Legend of Zelda.
Japan has a diverse population. There's the Japanese people, and then there's the Japanese people from the north. And then there's the Japanese people from the south.
When they're translated, they sound like southerners.
So we obviously can see a lot of Western influence in Japanese media. But it's definitely going the other way, too. We've got a lot of Japanese influence in Western culture, and much more beyond just, like, we are reading Japanese manga and watching Japanese anime now.
We are listening to your music and wearing your blue jeans.
So, Kermit, I think you had some specific examples you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting. So I'm a big I'm a pretty big anime fan, but like Western animation for television is definitely like my area of expertise. And I thought it was interesting that Disney recently, one is done and one is almost done, had two very specifically isekai stories. Not that we haven't had isekais in the West before, which I'm sure we'll get into the segment, but I wanted to bring up, because you can feel a lot of the... You can feel all of its influences, but you can feel that isekai influences, this being a show called Amphibia, where a girl and her three friends are transported to a world of a bunch of amphibious creatures, and also freaking terrifying dark skulls beasts around.
With all those little frogs, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I for whatever reason, I've seen lots of images and stuff from that, but I did not connect the name.
Yes, that is an isekai. They are transported to another world, and it felt very, for the time it came out, which was, I think it started just, what, a few years ago, three, maybe four tops, like, very clearly, this is an isekai. This is somebody being transported to another world. They didn't need to die.
Is that Disney?
That is Disney.
Is that the one that has, like, some really dark stuff in it?
Yes, well, both of them do, because the other one I was going to talk about is Owl House, which is a similar thing, where instead of Amphibia, where it was a girl going to a, like, more medieval-y thing where everybody's Amphibia, and there's, again, giant terrifying beasts that are, like, straight out of Dark Souls, Owl House is a girl going to a spot that's more about, like, demons and witches and magic and stuff.
But also another world.
But yeah, very clearly another world. But I thought it was interesting because, I mean, like I said, like another world is not something that Japan invented. Like, we've had transported to another world.
You've gone down rabbit holes. You've taken red pills.
Yeah.
Oh, we clicked our magic shoes farther back than that.
We were a Yankee in King Arthur's court. But it just, I think just with the popularity of isekais around the time of this happening, it just felt like a very apt comparison, I guess. And what I found more interesting, which I guess is maybe a jumping off point to ask our dear Professor Isekai Sensei-sama, is, I guess, small spoiler for both of these shows, they have a bit that at one point they travel back to their own world. Is that a thing that really ever shows up in isekai, or is it usually just like, oh, they died, so all my business on my old world is done. Wash my hands of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a super prevalent thing, but it definitely happens from time to time. There's a couple I can think of where they regularly go back and forth. There's one, actually, that I really like where he inherits a house from, I want to say, his grandmother, but I might be mixing the two up here. And the closet is a door to another world. And so he regularly goes back and forth. He goes into this other world. he gets all these cool powers and everything. He comes back. He's like super good looking and fit now, even though he was fat before. But he's got all these powers and everything. And basically he gets to keep his crazy powers in the real world. But he keeps going back and forth. Like he'll go over to the other world and hunt monsters and he meets the princess and all that kind
of
stuff.
But
then
he
comes back and
goes to
school. It
sounds like they've got the rest of the normal isekai trappings, but it's just also he gets to go back. He's not just dead and in this other world.
That one's actually pretty good. And then there's another one.
It's very Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe a little bit when you said closet that opens up to a fantasy realm, which I guess, again, another isekai, admittedly before. I wonder when isekai was like coined as a term.
Well,
Inuyasha had a well.
So I still have to look into this, but I was reading some stuff online. Ben, are you familiar with Gilgamesh?
Yeah. I mean, the epic of?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone mentioned, and
Gilgamesh
as I said,
is the first isekai.
Yeah, yeah. I have to look into it. I have not read Gilgamesh. I'm sort of tangentially aware of it. But what do you think?
Do I think Gilgamesh is an isekai?
What is the story of Gilgamesh for somebody who doesn't know, i.e. me?
At a really high level, Gilgamesh, a lot of it kind of, people say Gilgamesh came before Genesis, and Genesis tells a lot of the same stories as Gilgamesh. Basically about Sumerian royalty, prince, I think, going and looking, or king, going and looking for the elixir of eternal life.
And where does he go to look for it?
I forget. Does he go into...
I was going
to
say, I hope he goes to another world and this whole conversation is...
Does he go into... I mean, I just thought he traveled. I didn't realize he went into another world. I'm going to be real with you. I don't think I've read...
Well, I'll tell you what. I am going to read it. I'm going to look into this. And
about Gilgamesh.
At some point...
I know he talks to a snake at some point.
Does he talk to Enkidu, or is that a different story I'm thinking of?
I think that's...
the right pantheon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. At some point in probably the near future, that question may be answered.
Of what the first isekai, possibly the first isekai is? But I guess, I think another bit of research we should do, I think, from this is, like, when was isekai, coined? Because, like, we were joking earlier, like, we've had In Another World stories for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah, I mean, the actual term isekai...
Japan is not a creator of it. It's just, I think this recent fad is...
It's
coined
not
within their word and the billions and billions and billions of these stories.
It's not super old. It didn't become like isekai, the word didn't become the trope until recently, even though there have been isekai stories.
Correct.
For a long
time. It's the moment when the word becomes the word that it is, when it gained meaning beyond its literal meaning, which
I sent you guys a link to Sekai K.
Yeah.
World type, which is basically post-Evangelion stuff that was like
Can
Evangelion.
You explain that? Because I read it and then didn't understand it.
So I think...
The article was also very short and had no examples that I knew, so I was like, I'm out of my depth.
Evangelion basically inspired a series of stories in which interpersonal relationships were deeply connected to the fate of the world. Like where one character forming a relationship... was necessary to saving the whole world.
Like that's a good way to get a date.
What a weird thing.
Yeah, with Shinji basically being unable to function socially and that leading to, you know, his decisions in the battles with the angels. I won't spoil Evangelion for you.
You're not going to spoil an anime from the 90s?
Yeah, I guess I could.
I'm seeing a theme with some of these tropes. Between the isekai stuff where they get the harem and what you just described, Ben, and thinking about, I don't know if it was just I was misunderstood reading that or was reading something else of the whole, like, oh, the characters meet as kids. And then later, I guess, I was listening to you guys talking on heroin. Listen to Heroin Addiction. They talk about that trope and how that the series they did it good, though.
There's definitely an episode in the future of the podcast where we talk about how the 90s stock market crash in Japan changed everything in anime.
I mean, that was a part of my panel, is the boom creates the 80 hero, and then the crash creates the 80s and 90s edgelord.
The thing is, though, I don't... as much as, you know, sort of what is going on in the world and the way that affects individuals and their relationships is obviously a big part of that. I think there's more to sort of the isekai harem thing and the love triangle stuff and all that.
There's which certainly
is, you go to the other world and you find love, a thing that well, you right. cannot find and, in life. And, so but, it's like, I'm just seeing, like, my point of connecting a lot of those dots was like, there's a bunch of tropes that show up a lot that is based around you as a male getting a date and doing very little on your
well,
own.
Well, no, and that's exactly it. That you hit my point exactly, which is the fantasy that a lot of the consumers of these kinds of media have is, how do I get what I want out of a relationship with another person without having to put any work in?
Yep.
But I want to add one more thing to that, is that the crash of the 90s, right around that time, is when you see the video games that are going to form the backbone of the systems that all the isekai copy coming out. That's where you get, like, everybody knows what mana points are. Everybody knows what health points are.
Yeah.
It's going to create, because all those people, all they had to do, because they couldn't get jobs, like, it was something like a solid, like, I'm not going to give a number, but, like, a sizable chunk of university graduating classes could not get jobs when before they were basically guaranteed them. And all those people just sat around playing video games and reading anime. And that creates...
Reading anime.
Reading manga. That creates a whole generation of people capable of getting these, what to me seem like highly nerdy references. Mm. And I don't think if you didn't have the crash, there wouldn't be such a large group of people that could not just relate to the I can't get a date themes, but like also the whole like systemization and games and nerdiness. I think that stuff all became popular because there was a real need for like cheap entertainment, because I can't go to the bar.
Cheap gratifying entertainment.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, it's okay to say reading anime because it's subtitled.
It's okay, Granddad. You were still.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I was just reading something on Reddit the other day about you know, how there's this issue with a lot of men now in like the dating pools and everything, where their ideas of dating and relationships are severely warped. And I was thinking about this, and I think a lot of what it comes down to is the lack of socialization between boys and girls when they're young.
Is this secretly becoming a backdoor thing for the episode we wanted to do about like dating and women in anime?
It ties together a lot of topics we were talking about.
I'm not saying
about.
It can't be.
We'll definitely get farther into
there's,
it.
There's a changing role of men in society and a changing role of women in society.
Well, right. And I think sort of this idea that I'm sort of rolling around in my head, it stems from this thing where for a long time, starting in like the early 1900s, sort of up into the 90s, mid 2000s, there's this idea of like boys like trucks and policemen and cowboys and girls like dolls and playhouses, and sort of like segregating boys and girls into these different categories.
The blue eye on the pink aisle.
And when you do that, you
concepts.
Separate the socialization of boys and girls at a young age into teenage years. And for girls and women, this isn't so much of a problem because they tend to be raised to have like empathy as a basic.
You mean it's not as big a deal for a girl to go against gender norms? Like, girl can wear pants.
Well, there's that.
Can't wear a skirt.
But also to sort of like understand men, generally speaking, and like not expect unreasonable things most of the time. There's definitely women who are like that, but for the most part, they're more raised in a motherly way to say like, oh, empathy is a good thing. You need to be empathetic.
Yeah.
Whereas boys and men tend to be raised with that, like, oh, you got to be stoic and not show your feelings and not playing with girls, not getting
work,
socialization.
Work. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think tying this back into isekai and anime and everything, what happens is you get these boys and men start to have these fantasies of relationships and adventures and everything, where it's like things just come to them because of who they are, not necessarily because of what they are doing for others.
It's the male power fantasy that I get all this stuff. It's why I don't like isekai. It's the male power fantasy of I get all the stuff and I put in the minimum effort.
I would add something to that, though, of I think Japan hit this before we did, but we are hitting it now, mm-hmm. where for a long time, if you were a guy and you were fairly successful economically, which was easier to do, there were factories that you could go get a job at, every town was kind of doing better, you would get married because women had limited economic opportunities. Mm-hmm. They were expected to get married, raise a family. And even if they worked, you're only going to go so high. There's that glass ceiling. Now that's shifting, and there's a lot of people who are like, I'm a high value male. I did the time. I put in the work. I deserve these girls. And I think that Japan hit that first, where it's like, I was just planning to do what the system told me to do. I was going to go be a salaryman. I was going to work 90 hours a week, and somebody was going to marry me because they had to marry me. And now that doesn't happen, and that's, what do I do?
But there's also that, and this is sort of what I was getting at, which is like, men, instead of going, here is a human being who I want to interact with and have a life with, see women more as like a commodity.
Oh, yeah. Here is a body I can ogle, not a human being I can connect
with. Right, and someone to take care of me. And when I say someone, I don't mean someone. I mean like a thing that will make me dinner and tell me I'm great and like,
Well, and one of the reasons I think we've both, me and Kermit, have been critical of isekai is because a lot of isekai doesn't push back on that very much.
No, certainly.
No.
It just indulges it.
Yeah.
And I've said this, I said it earlier, 90% of isekai is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy junk food, so.
Yeah, but sometimes junk food can, whatever. Okay, question. Because when you were describing when it would, parsing this so clearly as a male power fantasy.
Yeah.
Like, because you don't usually see, I think we've talked about, like, you don't usually see, like, it's a woman in isekai. Because mm-hmm. when you do, it's usually, at least from your, through the lens of what you've read, it is the villainous stuff. It's like a dating thing. And it's not like, I'm going on a fantasy adventure and stuff like that.
Well, and that's a good point, because the woman-centric versions of it tend to be, I am taking the power. I am in a bad situation and I'm going to make it my own, and I am going to be the one in charge and do the things
like
I want.
But yeah, like working for it. I mean, I want to go back for a second and then bridge forward, is like the ones I was talking about on Disney. It's like they go there and the humans have a leg up by being humans in this world and having their whatever they're doing. And sometimes there's a little, you know, chosen one thrown in there or not. But like, just because they're a different element in this space gives them a bonus, but they're not just like, I'm an unkillable god. Like, it's like they still have to work. They get little special boons by having a different point of view, but they don't just instantly become like super OP. They still need to, they get a benefit, but they still need to work for it. But you saying earlier that whole like the male power fantasy, and like Japan's not going to do this. We're not going to do it well, but just my freaking queer brain goes, it's like, imagine you want to transition, or you're transitioning, or you have, and that your isekai story is, why look like what I think I should be looking like in the other world, and exploring something like that. As like, because I think the concept of an isekai has a lot of very easy space to satisfy literally any fantasy of anybody.
That was supposed to be.
And it just happens to be dominated by the male power fantasy, because that's the, you know, that's the
code. I don't know how problematic this is, and it may be.
Lay it on me. I love cringing at Japanese things that get these things wrong.
There's two separate series that pop into my head where two guys get isekai together.
Oh, you told me about this one.
One of them becomes a girl. And in both cases, they start off like, oh my God, this is the worst and blah.
No,
and then they slowly start to go like, maybe this isn't so bad. And maybe I'm actually in love with my friend and all that.
So
I'm not saying that's bad. I think I'm asking for like actual like
yeah.
So have you guys heard the? I'll relate this because this is a property that's heavily influenced by both East and West. The Matrix is it was supposed to contain a trans character in the original script, but they made them cut it. Switch was supposed to be AFAB in the real world and male in the self-image of the Matrix.
Right.
Yeah.
But Neo was kind of, and the Wachowskis are trans. And
trans.
Yeah. And so
publicly
Neo was kind of like an allegory for transitioning. And a lot, like that's a theory I've heard a lot of people.
I've heard it a lot, but nobody's ever sat me down and talked me through it because it's on the surface. I'm just like programming. And I haven't pieced it together, but I'm sure there's too many other little bits and bobs for it to not fit.
Them. But I definitely think something like the Matrix takes so many influences from anime.
Yeah.
It also has like incredibly overt references to Western philosophy, like simulation and simulacra.
Right.
And,
yeah.
I would like to see things go that direction with isekai. I want a challenging isekai.
Yeah.
They're
not made to be challenging.
They're
usually.
Definitely out there. But the problem that you're going to have with something that is so prevalent like that is it's so difficult to just sort of pour over everything and go, like, where's the good stuff? Because it's just, there's just so much of it.
But what, and I would address the isekai fandom. Is that what they want?
No.
They do not want to be challenged. Here's the
problem. Yeah.
But also it's like, I want to eat. Brian, you say your point, and then I'll say my point.
The thing that you have to remember is that people who are fans of isekai are not the kind of people who are looking for those out of the box, maybe difficult, challenge your idea kind of stories. That's that they're looking for something that is quick and easy and feel good and power fantasy.
But you could do, like that's I think that's where my point was going to be. It's like I've got my own power fantasies that are junk food. They just don't happen to match these, but doesn't mean they couldn't exist. Whereas if somebody comes, I think it was before we were recording that I was joking about. There was like a meme that was like the, like, oh, I'm in an isekai world. Oh, there's somebody selling female slaves. Oh, I guess when in Rome, I'll do it. And then like an actual, like, historical figure. What was the name again? John Brown coming in and like murdering this man to free the slaves. Yeah. And I was like, why can't I get a power fantasy of somebody going in and just going, hey, the system's fucked up. What if I use my super god powers to fuck them up?
I think
that would be very satisfying to me. That would be a power fantasy where you could a character could come upon a corrupt society, not because of some demon king, and they could use their god powers to like mess it up in a way that's really messy, in a way that I don't have to think too hard. It's one of the reasons I come back to it that I love The Punisher. When I read The Punisher, it's a power fantasy. I don't have to think that hard that like, yeah, killing everybody is not a good way to solve crime, but it's a power fantasy. Yeah. I don't care.
I was going to say, like, every Tarantino movie, like Django or... Right.
What was it? I love Django.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, also where he just murders the Manson family with a flamethrower.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
Like, just that's...
Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah. I don't think non-males or the male power fantasy don't want power fantasies. I think they just don't get them.
Well, that's the thing. And so...
But also, I guess because sometimes, I guess, certain people seem to think that just they're being queer characters and stuff like that makes it, you know, challenging when it's it's not.
I think what you'll see is that it will be, it's not that they won't exist, that they won't ever exist. And as soon as I come across one, you'll be the first to know.
Yeah.
It's just that I don't see very many people taking that on because it's not going to reach that bigger audience.
We saw that with freaking Tricks for Witches, because Tricks for Witches is trying to dismantle a very correct
and
Catholic
Tricks for
church,
Witches
and Tricks for Witches stopped.
Right, Tricks for
the
Witches
thing I wanted.
Is very progressive in a lot of ways.
It was surprisingly progressive.
Yeah.
I was very impressed by it, and it didn't go. And I guess there's my point, is the audience isn't there for it, and it drives me crazy, because
I
love this power fantasy of this magic man effing up the church in the freaking colonial in the Dark Ages.
I have seen more... what I would call, I guess, progressive or social justice-y, and I mean that in a good way.
Yeah.
Fantasy from Japan in the last 5 to 10 years than I have in my entire life put together.
Yeah.
I have a couple, like this is a different episode, is like good LGBT representation in manga. I have like, I think five I could name.
Wow, that's more than I
you could be confident, because I know there's a lot of people who like to like bend in a bunch of shapes for all the cross dressers to make it work, and most of them are just like, no, you
No, there's I think like Not Your Idol is a good one. X-Gender is a good one. There's a few others. I think this will probably wind up being its own episode. But
yeah,
I do think this is another interesting thing about East and West, is the things that are like moralistic for us across the ocean are very different.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like in our media, there has been, because we have a diverse population, there's a huge push for diversity in America. There's a huge push for representation of all kinds of gender and sexual orientation.
Nationalities. Literally those two I named, Amphibia and Owl House, both have their leads are people of color. And Owl House is also one of the gayest shows I've ever seen. It's incredible.
Yeah. Whereas Japan, everything
doesn't. It's all it's for the most part homogeneous.
All their stories take place in Japan, starring Japanese people who are Japanese.
Or they take place in pretend Europe, medieval Europe.
But I do think Japan is realizing...
But they start in Japan and then go there.
I went in an isekai where somebody isekais to France and then is disappointed.
There's an isekai where...
I love that. I love that. I think they have a word for it when they go to Paris and they're like, this sucks, and their hearts are broken. And I go, yes, yes, be disappointed.
There's an isekai where a Japanese girl gets reincarnated as Marie Antoinette.
Ooh,
so
rough.
I don't know if it stopped or if it just stopped being scanlated, but it's actually pretty good. But I'm wondering if
Marie Antoinette is a more complicated figure than she gets credit for.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if a random Japanese person writing accurate. It is equipped to tackle whatever.
Maybe they were more just historically accurate than you'd think. Though
I was gonna say maybe they did a lot of. I saw one where. There's a a young adult series I've been kind of paying attention to. The first book is called Iron Widow by Zhiren J. Zhao. And it's like a medieval mecha Chinese inspired.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
What's a medieval mecha?
They make mechs out of the corpses of monsters.
A meat Gundam.
Yeah, it's very. I like it. The main character is supposed to be inspired by China's first female emperor. She's kind of almost. I'd say she pronouns, but there's a little bit of gender stuff going on. There's a little bit of polyamory. I think it's something the kids would like, but the author made a joke that they're making a movie out of it, or there's a talk to make a movie out of it. And they were like, should we include a token white character for the audience to relate to?
No!
And she made a joke where she dresses up as Robespierre, who's been like transported into this fantasy world, and he's all confused and
so
getting his now head cut off again.
Yep, yeah, there you go.
To wrap this up, I wanted to ask.
We kind of left where we went, but I kind of loved where we went.
Bringing it back to Amphibia and Owl House, which is the one where the one person gets stabbed right through the chest?
I think it's Amphibia. Yeah,
I thought that's the one. Because I saw
a lot
that,
of brutal things happen about those shows.
I saw that online and went, wait a minute. You said this is Disney.
Yeah.
There's a sword sticking out of her chest. What the heck?
They also got a gay kiss on it. It was women, but it was still very exciting to get that on children's television.
Wait, isn't that that's
Owl
Amphibia?
House. Owl House is. Yeah. Owl House. Amphibia is not queer, but like Owl House is like very queer. There's an NB character. I have no other place to talk about this in a recorded format, but there's an NB character that you meet in the thing, and at one point you get a flashback to when they're in school and they look and sound different. And I love that because you never ever see that in anything. And it's like somebody who's seen people transition, like, yes, that happens. I like to see that. It shows the, whatever. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. It still makes me very happy that happened.
That's cool. I mean,
but yeah, I guess it's like
we need more of that.
We do. And I don't know how much necessarily now that I talk about it, that those stories were specifically because of the popularity of isekai in Japan and getting over here. But like, I'd love to see. I want to see a power fantasy take on an isekai that's for quote unquote me and not just the male power fantasy.
The thing is, this sort of goes back to what I was saying about the socialization between boys and girls, but I think that's also like the separation of those two groups, I think, is where a lot of misogyny stems from. Yeah. But at the same time, I think that's where you get transphobia and homophobia and racism, because people grow up in an environment that is other people like them. They don't experience normal other people who are different from them, be it a different color or a different sexual orientation. And then they grow up and they only see these weird, distorted things in, you know, the news or whatever
other media or Christianity that have no concept of.
Right. But and
they
so
see it
they.
Everywhere. So it's just they have the notes they've just sort of osmosis.
They don't have a reference for real people who are these things.
Yeah.
And it just sort of spirals from there.
Do you know one of the first things I noticed about Chainsaw Man? And it was that everybody wears the same suit.
Yeah. It's great.
Hmm.
Everybody wears this. Because that was one of the first things I noticed about the world.
All the devil hunters.
Yeah. It's gray. Safety. It's almost genderless. Yeah. There's just... The only color is the monsters.
Well, when thousands of people are constantly being horribly massacred, it doesn't really matter what you're wearing.
No, and it's what gives Chainsaw Man that air of depression. But it was one of the first anime in a long time, and especially when Chainsaw Man starts with that whole like I want to touch a boob.
Yeah,
they cleaned it up in the anime a little bit. He doesn't say boob. He says like I want to be with a girl or something.
No,
like
he says something about a boob at some point pretty early on.
Yeah, I'm pretty 100%. Sure.
I thought he didn't say boob. I thought he wanted to touch breast. Power's chest, but.
Yeah, I might have said chest.
I don't know.
I think there's an earlier part.
Still
whatever.
The same thing.
But yeah.
I don't know. But.
Opai.
Opai. But I thought that was interesting. And for as horny as Chainsaw Man presents itself to be, you think it's going to be one of those like, oh, this is going to be gore. This is going to be sexy. This is going to be.
It's not, though.
It's not. And it's just weird gore. That it's not. And then
It's just sad horny.
Reading that guy's one-shots, though. They're all these like depressing humanistic stories that usually involve like death of a close friend or something like that. It's
probably dealing with some stuff.
Yeah, but I like that I felt like I was reading something real.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed to tell people I read Chainsaw Man the way I am ashamed to tell people I read Love Hina.
Hmm.
The book series I May Let You Burn.
Oh, I forgot.
We gotta figure out.
You can
hold outside. We can use them. Oh, we're gonna freaking record the hell out of that. It's gonna be great. I'm excited.
You do the like the office space scene with the printer.
Yeah.
We'll bring the robes. It'll be a whole ceremony.
So, Kermit, we got really off topic, but did you have anything you wanted to close us out with?
This isn't where I thought we were going, but then I didn't know really where it was going, so I'm kind of actually really happy where we went. I'm very happy with that conversation.
Wanted to make sure there weren't any key points that you wanted to make.
No, I thought there would be more, and then we started talking, and then I'm like, oh, shoot, I don't know anything else. So I would say, like, genuinely, like, Amphibia is done. There's 3 seasons of it. Go check it out. And Owl House is almost done. There's going to be 3 seasons, and the 3rd season's kind of weird, and, like, a third of it is out right now, so... if you like isekai, but not the normal isekai power fantasy, but still kind of some of it, go check them out. They're really worth your time.
I guess we could say that, like, the way that Western media sort of pulls things from Japanese culture to use them is pretty different from the way that Japan takes Western culture and uses it, because Japan sort of takes it in and sort of just does whatever they want with it.
I guess some of it's a little different now, but it's like, if America takes it, even if there's not many of them, there's still Japanese people here in positions to say, hey, wait a minute, or other people cultures. And Japan, until more recently, hasn't been the case. So I think it's like, who's present to go, hey, wait a minute, watch that.
I'll pause us breaking our arm, patting ourselves on the back, because we did do the jelly donut thing. We did plenty of erasure back in the day.
Oh, for no. Everything that correct. There's plenty of that. What I'm getting at is like, short of, you know, your great examples of those shows where it's like they're using that isekai format, we don't really have a whole lot of like, we took this trope or whatever from Japanese culture and we're using that. It's more overt use it feels of like things it's samurai and ninjas and stuff.
Well,
like
no, there's
that.
Some of that. If you're, I mean, again, is watching a lot of American cartoons and whatnot, like you can see some of the inspiration, but it never feels as blatant as it is in actual anime.
Yeah,
I don't think
it always feels like this is very clearly inspired and not like we took this wholesale as a storytelling thing. It's like, oh yeah, we grew up watching Dragon Ball like you did, so we're going to use this as like a story beat.
Right.
I would temper it again. I'm going to say like, you know, I don't think Disney has the best history of doing justice to cultural properties.
True. Nope.
or queer communities.
Yeah. I think Mulan is nothing resembling the original Chinese poem. Certainly. I think there's a bunch of stuff like that where we do the same things.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to talk about. I'm not interested in assigning a lot of blame or saying Japan does it worse or better than us, but it's interesting to talk about, and it's fun to see it done to us for a change.
I'll tell you what. Let us know of Western media that you think is using Japanese culture.
Is cribbing anime notes or using Japanese culture really?
Let's get some engagement.
That's more recent, because like, oh man, going back and looking at old things from the early 2000s about how the internet at large thought about Japan.
I'm very interested.
It's definitely changed. It's kind of strange.
Things since the age of simuldubbing. It seems like this has always been a conversation between East and West, but we're getting close to it being a real-time conversation.
Yeah.
Yep.
For better or worse. I don't know if that means we're getting too globalized, we're losing our individuality, but
it's going to become a balancing.
Yeah.
Move over monoculture. It's the mono chaos.
All right, so time for mailbag segment. Kermit, did we get anything in the mailbag this time?
No.
No?
We didn't.
Oh.
And after that last letter, I'm kind of worried.
That reminds me, I didn't tell you guys about this.
What?
That I had a bit of an incident.
Do you tell?
So after we were done recording last time, and just to reiterate, we read Truxon's letter. There was no redactions in it.
Correct. There was nothing marked out. We've had letters marked out before.
Yeah.
When they didn't want something said, and this one was just clean.
So, you know, expecting everything should be fine, right? And I'm unsure if this is related, but it was very suspicious. I was walking back to my car. And I decided I was going to record a little thank you to everybody for listening for a whole year. And, you know, I wanted to sort of reiterate how I felt about that. But, I almost got hit by a truck.
Oh
yeah.
Any markings?
Just
any
out walking? Or?
Yeah. So I was just walking back to my car, and as I'm recording, I hear this truck coming, and I'm, you know, it's coming right for me. And I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah, like during the headlights, you just kind of seize up.
Yeah. I'm like, what, you know, the kind of thing where just short of life flashing before my eyes, you know. And all of a sudden, just as this truck's about to hit me, I'm thinking like, oh, I'm about to die. This really sucks. Another truck comes out and I didn't even see this other one and just completely slams this other truck out of the way and misses me.
Wild.
Wow.
And, you know, I didn't know what was going on.
Did you see if there was like any markings? Ben was asking that. Like,
yeah. What did the truck look like?
Like, was it license a particular plate, color?
Oh, red truck.
I didn't even think about it. No, I didn't.
I mean, obviously, like, that was a traumatic moment. So, like, yeah, you're not always going to remember everything.
I didn't. Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that. I just got out of there.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, that's wise.
So, I.
You think that's related?
The timing is very suspicious.
Like, isn't it weird? Like, why in the little neighborhood around my apartment a truck would almost hit you and then another truck would hit. Like that, I don't think.
Wait, and you didn't hear that?
No, and especially because like I feel like I would that would have come up in the news, and I definitely didn't hear that.
You didn't see a wreck outside?
No.
Huh.
No, I went out walking like I did every morning. I didn't see anything. I know where you park.
It's strange that they would even be able to get up enough speed.
Well, I don't know what was going on. I'm not going to venture a guess at this time.
I'm sure we'll find out given some time.
I think
something's up.
It was a random fluke.
Let's keep our mouth shut.
A random fluke. Wink.
So, guys, we were going over what we were going to talk about for today's recommendation, and we found that we've never talked about Mob Psycho 100. We've been watching that for a long time now.
One of our first ones we watched.
Season 3 is going on right now, right?
Correct.
And, you know, it's great, but we've never talked about it.
Wait, what's this segment called? Anime book, not a book. Love.
Okay.
Mob Psycho 100.
Yeah,
a good anime. We've never read the manga personally.
So I believe we watched season one together
and
at some
season
point.
Two. Yes.
Yeah. So, funny story about that. I actually accidentally started watching season two. Like a couple episodes.
I think you at least got the first few episodes of season one, didn't you?
Yeah, no, because I remember you coming in and being like, this is really confusing to get in on. You're like, I'm wondering when they're going to go back and say like how everybody got here.
Right.
And it's like they did. You just experienced, you Benjamin Buttoned this anime. Yeah.
But despite all that, I love Mob. It is.
What is it? Let's describe the show. I don't want to just don't just come in and go, this thing's great, and then not describe what it is.
How do we describe Mob?
Mob Psycho is, first off, it is from the writer of One Punch Man, because there's a lot of concepts that are similar. So One Punch Man has this man, through fairly straightforward mundane things, has the great power that he can destroy anything in one punch. Mob Psycho 100 sees a teenager, I think he's in like junior high.
Yeah,
he's 14.
He's 14. He's not actually named Mob. It is a nickname, as putting it pleasantly,
Shigeo?
That sounds about right. But he is like a mob in like an MMO. Like he's just sort
of Mobakun.
He's just kind of present. He's not really fully in charge of himself, so to speak. But he also has like psychic powers that could essentially destroy anything.
Yeah. So as far as
One Punch Man kind of,
as far as we know, he is the most powerful psychic in the world.
Correct. It's got a similar but definitely different and same feeling the One Punch Man, where you build a big problem and then it is defeated.
Yeah.
But where what's the guy from One Punch Man?
Saitama.
Where Saitama is like, I've got this power and I'm depressed because I want to use it to its fullest and I can't. Mob usually actively does not like using his psychic powers.
Yeah.
He wants to be able to learn how to be like a regular person.
Which I will say, the one thing that tends to irk me the most in Mob, and this is not a real problem, but it just sort of at the back of my mind, a niggling, is that a word I can use? Thing that sort of bugs me a little bit is there's all these situations where he could potentially very easily resolve and he doesn't, because he's like not confident in himself and he doesn't want to use his powers if he doesn't have to and all that stuff.
Yeah, his powers, especially going off the chain, is based around his emotions, and this is where the 100 name comes in, because over time you will see his like little emotion gauge fill up, where it's like, oh, Mob's emotion gauge is at like 62% after he has like a particular interaction with somebody. And all of this sounds very like shonen anime rote, and Mob is like, even though it will play with those trappings, it just isn't that.
It's almost shonen battle anime in reverse to an extent.
How so? Describe that.
So, like, instead of...
I don't disagree, but I want to understand your picture.
Instead of the protagonist going, I'm working to get stronger, and I'm gonna... It's more like, I'm the strongest and I want to work to be a normal human.
I want to work to be a not just a normal human, but like a complete human. Like this is an anime that I found that does really good stuff with mental health. To spoil a thing in the beginning that is literally one of my favorite things and is now donning two of my workout tank tops that I go to the gym in, they have this big thing early on where it's like, oh, mom doesn't know what to do, so he joins the like occult club, which is this crappy little club. They're all kind of losers, like tucked away in this corner of the school. And then a bunch of these big jock guys come in and go, hey, unless you can like actually prove yourself as a club, we're taking over this space. And you're like, oh, it's the jocks beating up the nerds, you know, whatever. This, you know, this sucks. And then you learn it's not that, it's the body improvement club, and they're the most wonderful supporting guys ever. And these occult guys actually kind of suck. And Mob joins them, and even though he's like not in the best shape, like genuinely tries his best, and they're all supportive of him. Yeah. And like just over the time of the episodes and the seasons, seeing him like genuinely get stronger, not in any like incredibly meaningful way, but just as like a human being.
Like
as,
physically stronger.
Yeah, just like, because like in the beginning when he's running, he gets exhausted really quickly. And it's not like this ever comes up in a fight. This isn't like Goku training in like the freaking gravity chamber. Mm-hmm. This is like the joy that I get going to the gym and like, oh my gosh, I upped my weights.
Yeah,
it's not like, now I can punch a train. It's just like, it genuinely, body improvement.
Yeah, it is a very realistic, exercise and improvement.
He runs a 5K and he finishes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what it's about. It's not like, oh my gosh, he's the fastest, or oh, when he gets into these big psychic fight problems that these come in, it's like, I mean, if I want to go in a really big metaphorical way, they do, but like, in the actual physical sense, they don't. But it's about, like, I've never seen something where watching the character grows so organically that you can see it over time, where it's kind of slow, but you see it in moments as he's interacting with people over the seasons where, like, he's getting more understanding of his emotions. He's more in control of them. He makes more decisions for himself instead of just following along what's going on.
Right.
But he's also confused with some of that. And it's just, I don't know. It's very relatable.
Mob Psycho is what Stan Lee wanted Spider-Man to be, but Stan Lee is not a very good writer. It's like Spider-Man has great power, and that should come with great responsibility. Same for Mob, because Mob has a teacher who tells him we don't use psychic powers to hurt people. It's like knives. They're tools.
Well, and it's also important to note that when he was a child, he accidentally hurt his brother with his psychic powers. And so he and they sort of get over this in the first season, but he's got sort of like a what could be described as a mental block on it.
Yeah.
Even though he can still like use his powers, he's very afraid to use them because he doesn't want to hurt anybody.
Right. And like Peter Parker, he's a nerd who is trying to sort of find his way in the world, try to learn how to talk to a girl he likes who he happens to have grown up next to.
Oh my gosh, I want a side tangent there. I never trust anime when it comes to like, here's the girl that we have not spent any time with. Mm-hmm. And the way Mob has been doing it, because it's like we finally got a little extra sliver. It's like I trust Mob is going to actually do that story properly because they've been so realistic and progressive with so many other things where it's like, how are you going to be close to this human that you've never talked to?
Yeah.
And usually where in those anime cases, it's like, oh, whatever, boy gets with girl. But in this case, it's like, I think that is a thing they're going to deal with.
Because, yeah,
like,
it seems really
they
realistic.
They deal with so many other like actual growing up things in a fresh way that just, I don't know, it feels very resonant to me. This season's been about like, I'm about to go to high school. Like, what is my career going to be? What am I going to do with my life? On top of the big fantasy, you know.
Should I stay where it's comfortable? Should I take risks? And the thing I like about Mob more than most anime is that each season of Mob could be the last season. I'd be totally satisfied.
I'm always surprised there's another season, but I am never, I'm always like, oh my gosh, I get another blessing of Mob in my life. Hell yes.
Mob in one season shows character growth that most animes never achieve.
Oh yeah.
In hundreds of episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That level of, like, one is obviously not much of an artist.
I love his art style. I love, one of the things I do love about Mob is the look of it. It's so,
I like,
these are parents that actually look like parents I've met, and it's very satisfying.
I like one's imagination.
Yes.
But I definitely think the characters he creates, the things he writes, he's just doing something that a lot of people have tried and failed to do. Mob tells a human story that many people have tried to tell, like with Spider-Man. And I'm bringing that up kind of as a joke, but kind of not, because Stanley, if you ever saw the interviews with him, was like, Peter Parker's a different hero than we've ever seen before because he's just a regular guy like you and me, and he has to worry about running out of money and not being able to take Mary Jane on a date. And it very quickly just turns into, he's Spider-Man. He can do whatever he wants. Yeah, he's definitely going to marry the hot redhead because he's Spider-Man. She knows he's Spider-Man. That's awesome. And Mob never does that. Mob is constantly, initially in the first season, it's Mob Psycho 100 because he's afraid of losing self-control. He's afraid of showing emotion because that's when his powers come out and that's when he hurts the people around him. But then he gets over that. He starts using his psychic powers to help people. And they just manage to do character arcs and write stories in a way that most other animes are not interested in doing.
Yeah.
While also having some of the best animation.
Yeah, it gets to eat, it gets to have its cake and eat it too. It gets to do a very, like, usually anime bungles these stories or doesn't do them with this level of, like, feeling and depth. But also it just has fun, action-y, funny moments that are very anime, but it just does it so flawlessly, and
we definitely need to drive the point home that on top of this sort of, like, somber growth and, like, introspection and everything,
a very human
story. It's very funny.
It's very funny. It's very over the top. Yeah, the animation's incredible. The action is gorgeous. Like, the amount of times that I laugh during Mob Psycho 100, like, it's the reason I usually like to end with it when we have our anime nights. Like, it makes me feeling, it's what I want the most when I'm consuming media. Here is a fun, fantastical thing that also has, like, a deep, meaningful thing that makes me feel things, but it's not just, like, there's moments of depression, but there's moments of, like, well, here's looking up in a way that doesn't feel cheap, or, like, let's go have fun, or, like, oh, shoot, we got to deal with this thing. Like, it just...
Yeah. And it feels...
I feel the full gamut.
It feels collaborative in a way that not a lot of anime projects do. A lot of anime is based on manga or light novel or something like that, where it's got, like, a very rigid, defined storyline. The manga basically serves as a storyboard. You're just kind of locked in. You know that the fans of the manga, which are going to be your primary audience, want to see exactly what they saw before rendered in animation. Whereas with Mob, we're giving a lot of credit to one, and I think he deserves a lot of credit. I don't think any of these storylines are in the webcomic. I think hints of them are.
Oh, have you read them?
I've seen the webcomics, and they're very, like, bare bones. They're designed to be, like, read as cell phone comics.
Okay.
I don't think they get anywhere near this detailed.
Oh, visually, no.
Or even in the story. I'm
now always mistrustful of all that ever since we looked at the manga for Ranking of Kings and it looked like a shit post. And I was like, there's no way this freaking manga inspired one of the most beautiful looking and moving things that I've seen recently.
Well, I think that's sometimes good, where you get, you know, concept by so-and-so, and it's good concept, and they did a lot of work.
And it still has a style on it visually. Like, the characters are all weird geometric shapes, and I find them very charming.
But it gives the director freedom to be a director. It gives the animators freedom to play with their style. It gives the writers freedom to write different scripts. You're not locked into doing the, you know, Namek arc this time.
It's genuine and empathetic.
I also want to point out, you know, the other characters are so well done. Obviously, Mob is a very complex and deep character, but all of these characters that surround him are just, like, so well executed and have many layers and things.
We're going to talk about Reagan.
Who is ostensibly Mob's mentor.
Yeah.
So he's basically a con man. So
he's the shyster.
He says that he, like, does exorcism and stuff, but he actually has no psychic power. And he then uses Mob, because Mob does have psychic power, to basically gain a leg up in the world and become, like, a real medium or
whatever. But he's also, I think, even before Mob comes into the picture, like, he's technically lying to people, but he uses his skills to still help the people that come in to deal with their problems in usually comedic but still meaningful ways.
And that's, the thing that gets me the most with him is that you've got these different levels, because if you just look at him at sort of a surface level, you get this like, oh, he's a con man, shyster. Like
he's lying to these people. He's taking people. Their money because he is a little money obsessed.
But times. Then you get a little bit deeper and you're like, oh, he is actually solving a lot of problems for people.
He genuinely wants to help Mob out on his journey.
Yeah.
Not just as like a teacher, I tell you exactly what it is, but like as, yeah, the mentor is a good word for it. Like he is trying to guide him along to make good choices.
But, and then on top of this, there's one point where he is basically telling Mob, like, you're still just a kid. You don't have to deal with adult problems. And Mob is like, oh, right. I don't have to be all depressed about this. And somehow like transfers all of his power to Regan, and then Regan just like kicks ass. He's like completely able to use these powers
because he's the best. Regan's right. The best.
It's like it's amazing.
He was like my favorite from episode one because I love the very like talky. He's very animated in the way he moves and he moves his hands around, and I love that. But that like it's all of that, and then you that learn that it's like no, he's like genuinely a good dude, and not that way where it's like he's always a jerk, but if you measure everything he's done, he's a good guy. It's like the way he interacts with Mob, where it's like it's almost bad, like some of it's a little bit of a front, but it's like he genuinely wants the best for him. Well, and at times where it's like he uses him a little bit, but he's like there's still at that core of like I'm trying to kind of help you along, and at some point I'm gonna, like, this season is very much been like at some point I have to think that I might have to let you go from the nest, and it's like, and he genuinely worries about that because like that's a, like, this is his freaking student to an extent. This is somebody he's worked with a while, and he's like, I don't know what I'm gonna do afterwards, and I'm a little worried about that, but I've, you know, he's got to make decisions for himself.
Well, he and Mob bring out the best in each other.
Yeah.
Mob needs, they are exactly what each other needs. Mob is like an emotional compass for Regan, and Regan is the mouthpiece for Mob. Like, Mob needs a con man because Mob has no confidence.
I never thought of it like that, but that's perfect.
I say Reagan's also sort of like an emotional anchor for Mob a lot of times.
Yeah, he talks Mob off a ledge more than anyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really great relationship, even though, like, if you sort of just watch it at the surface level, it seems like it might be toxic.
Mob needed
to say that it's perfect.
Yeah, well, definitely.
But it's less toxic. It's, you know, not majority toxic.
Yeah.
The nice thing is Mob has a decent relationship with his family.
Yeah. Right.
This is icing on the cake.
It's anime parents that are alive and are just normal parents that don't suck.
Yeah.
It's so refreshing.
And his brother, like he, you know, after he sort of gets over the fact that he hurt his brother, they start getting along. And then his brother develops some psychic powers. And so they can sort of like confide in each other and stuff.
I'm going to stop the whole podcast right now and tell you everything you need to know about this anime in one sentence. His dad took off work to watch his track meet. You name me one anime where a father took off work to do anything.
And he didn't die in a horrible accident on the way there.
You mean one anime where a father takes off work, full stop.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they're isekai. Can't. I'm dead. I can leave work whenever I want. I'm dead.
I don't have to work now. That is most of them,
actually.
Name
an anime father who died via truck sand so he could go isekai style to his child's track meet. But yeah, no, a Mob Psycho, like, I love Spy Family, I love One Piece, but there's just, like, there's something about Mob Psycho, maybe because it doesn't feel, like, it's still very clearly anime, but it doesn't feel as anime as the other ones. That's just like, this is my special little boy.
Well, and
like
also,
the internet at large doesn't fully know how special of a little boy he is, but like it's my favorite just because, I don't know, it more than anything else, it emotionally resonates with me a lot.
It lets itself be ugly.
Yes.
It's not obsessed with being cool all the damn time.
But that's what makes it cool though.
Yeah, exactly.
And it does do the cool parts really well.
Yeah, no, exactly. But you can tell the people who work on it, they're like, I'm going to let my writing stand on its own. I'm going to let my animation stand on its own. Because even the animation that looks super cool, it goes down to hella sketchy. You pause on any one of those frames and like nobody's face is rendered.
Yeah, they do
you don't eat them.
What are they called? The rubber banding? They do that a lot.
Rubber banding?
Yeah, it's where like you draw to get the idea of motion well, you sort of like take your character model and just stretch it out.
Oh, the squash and stretch stuff or like swatches or stuff. Yeah. They understand movement. It's all very kinetic and I love it for that.
And it's cheap, but it looks good.
They save the money for when they need it.
Yeah.
They've been these incredible, every season has these incredible, I think every episode is like a...
Sakuga.
No, not Sakuga. I mean, yes, Sakuga, but it's, I always forget the art medium, but there's like a specific artist working in a specific medium. I think it might be charcoal. I don't think it's charcoal because it's like ink smudgy.
Oh, yeah.
But and it's they, like, it's almost, it's like, I know art is technically already stop motion, but it's art that feels like stop motion, but it's just
dry
2D
erase.
Art.
The current season, they're doing dry erase.
Is it dry erase? Yeah. But yeah, like just and sometimes in the intro, some of the episodes, and it's gorgeous every
and
time.
We
it
do need to say, like, intros and outros, some
oh
of the
gosh.
Best every single season.
The
it's
mob
just some,
choir.
Yeah, just some of
literally
the
credited
best.
As the mob choir. Visually, auditorially, like, oh my gosh, killers.
Yeah, so as much as we recommend that you should definitely go out and watch the whole thing.
At the very
you should
least.
At least go on YouTube.
Watch the OPs. And if that does not grab you, I don't want to have a conversation with you. Don't talk to me.
I have recommended
I will not shake
it,
your hand.
Like, I have recommended it to my sister who does not watch anime. Simply because my sister is a nurse. She's going on to do a master's degree. She works her ass off constantly. And in school, she would like study for tests until she cried. And that just, I thought she would really enjoy how hard mob works. Mm. And then the icing on the cake of, oh, and by the way, here just for you, because mob works so hard and you guys went along on that ride with him. Here is mob just destroying these assholes.
Power fantasy.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah. But it's an earned power
Give
fantasy.
Me emotional maturity and little moments that resonate with me and then just crush a bunch of stuff that needs crushing. Done. Yeah. Easy.
It does growth right. There's no power levels. There's just...
Yeah.
Yeah. It always works. It didn't... Not to pull this back up again, but it especially going on now, we're in the middle of third season. Like, it doesn't feel like it lost its way like One Punch Man did. Like, always feels like it's been resonating since moment one.
Yeah.
With the story. Even though, like Ben said, it's like every season I think I'm not getting any more mob and I've made peace with that and it's okay. And every time I get another one, it's like, it doesn't feel like, oh my gosh, we have to go back. It's like, well, no, he's still growing up. There's more stories to tell. Mm-hmm. But every season ends with like, okay, we could stop here. This was a goodbye felt meaningful.
And, the other thing, I don't know how common this is for anime these days because it seems like things do take a while to come out, but it seems like there are years that go by between mob seasons.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So I think they take the time they need. I don't think they make one if they don't have a story.
Yeah. I think they wait, yeah.
And I respect that.
Yeah. I'm curious about the manga and the webcomics, and I had just seen recently and was telling you guys about there's a spinoff manga that follows Reagan that I really want to read because, like, what is that?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, literally of all the things we've recommended, I don't talk about it enough and gush about it enough to people like other things, but Mob Psycho 100, literally one of my top picks of all time.
Yeah, honestly,
one of my faves.
I can't believe we waited this long to talk about it.
I think we just haven't, I mean, what we, like you said, we watched it back in the day many years ago. Yeah. And that was well before we had a podcast and just, we haven't thought about it at all because we're not reading it. So now that it's back, we were like, oh yeah, Mob freaking rules.
It's an anime that's kind of like Spy Family and that I think everybody knows about it. I don't think anybody needs us to tell them that Mob Psycho exists. If you're listening to an anime podcast, you probably have heard about it. But you may have the wrong idea about it.
Yeah.
Like if somebody explains to you the plot of Spy Family, it's like, yeah, that is the plot,
but
that's
not
what it's like.
When I describe it to you like that, it sounds like, and your brain is thinking about it as an anime, you're going to see something else in your head and it's like, it's not that. And I feel like Mob is the same thing. It's like, whatever you're thinking, it's not that.
If you like anime, Mob is worth a shot.
Yes.
If you don't like it, you're not, okay, that's fine. One or two episodes is probably enough to know.
Oh yeah. You should know by the third episode if you're going to actually like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely check that out. A very high recommend from us. Probably in the top 10. I would say top 10
anime of all time for me.
Yeah. Of all time, I think.
Easy.
So let us know if you've watched it, let us know what you think. If you haven't watched it, go watch it and then let us know what you think.
Yeah. Or watch the op at the very minimum, watch the OPs. Yeah. They're so good. I'm going to go watch them right after this.
Well, that'll do it. That's our 13th episode.
Woo!
First episode of year two.
Lucky number 13. Nobody died yet.
I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, this was a good one. Always do. Getting back at it.
I like talking to you guys.
What a surprise.
So yeah, we hope you enjoyed listening. We really appreciate all of our listeners, especially our German listeners. We know you're out there. But yeah, we'd love to hear from you. There's a bunch of different ways that you can contact us at this point, and I will tell you about them right now. We got our website, animepodcasterreincarnation.com, which you can go out there and comment on the posts for the specific podcast episodes. We also have different blog posts out there with additional information on reviews and stuff like that. So check that out. We do now have a Patreon. If you'd like to throw us a couple dollars and tell us that you like what we're doing, that's at Anime Podcaster Reincarnation on Patreon. We don't have any tiers out there yet. We want to hear from people and hear what you would want from the tiers. Like, what kind of benefits do you want? So definitely let us know about that. You can find us all on Twitter, at least for now, until Elon Musk tears it all down. You can,
I forgot about that circus.
You can hit me up at Isekai Sensei. And Ben is at Benbow Swaggins.
Yep.
And Kermit the DeKrog.
Correct.
Which he'll probably never read again.
No.
So you can, you know, DM or mention me or Ben, and we'll make sure he sees it. You can also just email us directly, isekaisenseisama@gmail.com. Send us whatever. If you want to send us something for the mailbag, you can do that there. If you just want to let us know what's going on, what you like, what you don't like, just shoot us an email.
I'm also on Mastodon if you're one of those people.
Yeah, I haven't jumped over there yet. So. And we got our YouTube channel where we release this in stereo. So if you want to hear a slightly higher quality version.
No, we simuldub it. We re-record the whole thing
in stereo.
And that YouTube channel is That Time I Got Reincarnated as an Anime Podcaster. You can also hit us up on Good Pods. That's another place where you can comment on the specific episodes. Ben hates Good Pods, but you can at least comment there and let us know what you think.
I mean, I like it more. The worse Twitter gets, the more I like Good Pods, I guess. If they get their website in gear, they might actually get an audience.
If you have not heard enough of Ben, you can check him out on Words About Books.
Yeah.
You got anything interesting going on right now?
I'm debating. I'm reading the Faraway Paladin light novels.
Oh.
I don't know which podcast that is for. So, I don't know. Let me know.
All right.
You can find me here. If you are interested in hearing me play video games with my buddy Noah, coming up, hopefully finally starting next week, at 3:30 to 4:30 on his Twitch at +2 Comedy, we'll be playing, I believe it's called Return of the Obra Dinn.
Oh, nice.
Which I'm very looking forward to. I have played it. My friend Noah has not. I feel like our puzzle brains combined will will be a good time with this. So,
cool. Any specific days you guys play?
I'm on, we usually would do that Wednesdays from 3:30 to 4:30 is the day that I'm usually on. He streams games every day, 3:30 to 4:30 on that channel, but I'm usually on for Wednesdays. So,
cool.
Come check me out there on +2 Comedy Gaming where he puts the vibes.
Awesome. So, once again, thanks for listening. We really appreciate it, and we hope you enjoyed it. And if you find yourself in an unknown land, you have my permission for cultural appropriation.
Is the red light on?
The red light is on. That means we're
recording. Brad, you have to turn on the red light. Sell your voice for money. You don't care.
Can't reach this
wrong right. Or if it's right. Isekai. Professor Isekai Sensei.
I say, I think that's the intro. There's the Japanese people from the Man Island, and then there's everybody else.
So
I don't know, it's more diverse than that, but it's a bit. Sorry.
No, no. I mean, I'm talking
I was
about...
like, I was genuinely just thinking about like all the stuff I've been learning in Golden Kamuy. It's like, I've never thought about there being Japanese Russians, but totally that would be a thing. They're right next to each other. They have bordering islands. Like, audio wink. Brad, when I say that, play the little like ding noise.
All right.
Blink twice if you're in danger. Yo ho ho took a bite of anime.
Oh jeez.
Yo ho ho, he took a bite of gong gong.
We're gonna move on right away.
D-Y, nah, he's not shy. The pirate crew coming through doing the thing. He's the king of the pirates. He's gonna be king. And then every time they got another crewmate, the intro changed so it would reference Sanji and stuff, but I stopped watching, so I don't know those versions. Because supposedly there's a version where Chopper's a doctor, and I never heard it.
Oh my! I just made that up on the spot.
Okay, good.
Do you have a better one?
No, okay. But every time I remember that we're at the end, and you're gonna do that, I'm like getting ready to judge you super hard, and I'm like, you better not fuck this up. And it's like that one was. I thought you were gonna say you have my permission to dress like a priest.
If you ever get reincarnated in another world, just remember there is one God and Allah is his name.